Hey, we're back talking UConn today. They're very far away, way up in the Northeast. But I've got Amon Kidwai on today to talk about the Huskies and our continuing series on Big 12 expansion. You know, we'll get on some of that later, but UConn is very interesting to me because I think on the field, on the things that people see, they're not that attractive. But the more I talk to people around the Big 12, and I'll touch on this with Amon a little bit later, the league is a lot higher on UConn, I think, than people realize. I think fans prioritize a lot of times football and other things, and that's why you hear, you know, insane choices like Boise State and that kind of thing, how they keep surfacing. But UConn is interesting, and we'll get into why with Amon. It should be a great show, kind of winding down our summer series on expansion in the Big 12. But before we get to the meat of the show, you should know about SeatGeek. They're always the first place that I go to look for tickets to a game or a concert. I've got the app on my phone. It's been a confusing process for a long time to get tickets. It's always hard to find the best deal, know you got the best deal for a game or show, whatever you're trying to go to. But SeatGeek is different. You know, they've come along, created a great app, website. It's easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. They do all the price comparison for you by pooling, you know, multiple ticket sites and ensuring you got the best possible deal. They do the work. You save time and money. That's a great deal for me. And they want to help you get the most bang for your buck. And that's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats, be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. And then, of course, best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So to do that, go download the SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab, click Add a Promo Code, enter the promo code FLYOVER, that's FLYOVER for you spelling challenged folks. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So go download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code FLYOVER today. You will not regret it. Streamline the process for getting out, having some fun this summer, or even planning ahead for this fall, getting some tickets. Football season is creeping up. We're only, 3 weeks away from Big 12 Media Days, which is the unofficial start of the season. So make that happen today. And with that, let's get to today's show. So this week's show, we're talking UConn, so it made sense to get someone who covers UConn. Amon Kidwai covers the Huskies for SB Nation and Rivals.com. A couple of great sites that I definitely read. So, Amon, I want to understand, you know, every team that we've gone over this summer, you know, in some way, I think there's at least a decent case for in the Big 12. I might exclude Memphis from that. But BYU, Cincinnati, UCF, maybe Houston in some ways, there's a case for all of those. But when I talk to people around the Big 12, you know, the more sense that I get is that the league is really high on UConn, and I don't really get it. Is the Hartford market kind of that lucrative, and would UConn, in the only sport that matters, kind of being football, really, do you feel like they would deliver that, or how would you kind of characterize that?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely not an ideal fit, you know, UConn in the Big 12. That being said, for a variety of reasons, neither are the other schools mentioned, which you mentioned. So other contenders such as Houston, UCF, you know, they all kind of have their warts, so to speak, you know, which is why the Big 12 has, to this point, chosen not to add one of those schools to their ranks. UConn has the strongest national brand, I would say, out of the schools available. And I think that's what kind of has them in this discussion, even though, as you stated, you know, the football isn't great and fit is not ideal. But I still think, just given UConn's, you know, with regards to the market, Hartford, New Haven is the number 30 TV market. I know those don't matter so much if you're not doing a network, which seems to be the decision, but still a decent indicator of the kind of size of the market. They own the whole state of Connecticut. They have presence in the New York City and Boston, you know, areas as well. So there definitely is a strong following and brand for UConn, which is, I think, why they've been in this conversation.
Yeah,
when it happens.
What is sort of the UConn perspective, you know, on the Big 12? Where do they sort of stand on where they want their university and the athletic department to be?
Yeah, I would say there's some who, for the reasons that it's not a great geographic fit, and potentially other reasons why it's not a great fit. But I think at the end of the day, every UConn fan would rather be in the Big 12 than the American Athletic Conference, no doubt. Even though we are more of a basketball-focused school, it's obviously an upgrade in hoops. And then really the bigger reason being that, you know, you want to keep up financially with who has become your competition on the college football scene. So, you know, well-heeled schools, whether it's football or basketball, you know, in football you could call our competition Syracuse, Boston College, and Rutgers, and they all have Power 5 invites, you know, at the moment. So, and then in basketball, we're competing with Kansas, Duke, UNC, and Kentucky, and that kind of thing. So I think the biggest issue is keeping up financially, and for that reason, most UConn fans, you know, would take an invite to the Big 12, you know, if it was their decision.
I think when people talk about TV markets and stuff, and you're right, I think with the Big 12 network effectively dead, it's less of a pushing point. But I think too, when you're trying to sell your product to TV networks and in the you know, impending TV deal that'll be coming up in 6-7 years, when you start sort of talking to networks, you know, New York would be interesting, and New Jersey and that area. What is the best way that you can categorize or describe the kind of hold or kind of sort of leg in that UConn would have in that market?
Absolutely. So I would say if you're looking at the spectrum of public schools in the New England region as well as New York, and then even New Jersey, UConn is really the best public option academically in that area. And I think, you know, when you think about what the cities that UConn is right squat in the middle of in New York City and Boston, for a good reason, UConn is placing a lot of people in those very large markets. And I think it's a little bit separate from the original question, but I think, you know, UConn football has a little bit more potential than people think. So it can certainly become a solid piece of a full conference.
Yeah, touching on football, I think it's clear, you know, the biggest negative is that there's no running from the idea that when you talk about football, at the current state, you know, UConn, I feel like, would dilute the Big 12 product a little bit. But you mentioned that. I don't think people kind of know, you know, where this program has been and where it could go. Can you kind of give us, or how young the program really is, can you kind of give us, you know, a brief history lesson on where that is and where it came from?
Sure, sure. So UConn has been was a Division I AA, or what's now called FCS, school for the vast majority of its history up until you know, there's some years where you're independent and you're in transition, but we can call it roughly the year 2000, at which point they started to transition into FBS. And the big reason for that, UConn was not even much of a powerhouse within the FCS, but the reason that they made the move up was because the invite came from the Big East to upgrade the program. The Big East at the time was trying to remain competitive and financially solvent. They saw football money as the key to that, to keeping that basketball conference intact. And so they offered actually both Villanova and UConn the opportunity to move up. Villanova declined. UConn accepted. Ultimately, football still ended up being the Big East's undoing, and so that's kind of how UConn landed in the American Athletic Conference. But to go back to the history across, you know, the 15 years where that happened, yeah, UConn has had some solid teams in terms of placement in the NFL. They've done pretty well considering they've been an FBS school for only 15 or 16 years. They've had two first-round picks in Donald Brown, the running back, who was drafted by the Colts, and Byron Jones recently, cornerback drafted by the Cowboys. They have had seasons where they've finished in the top 40, top 50, top 60, you know, of kind of the S&P rankings, final S&P rankings, have a reasonable history of making bowl appearances under Randy Edsall before he left, including a Fiesta Bowl appearance against Oklahoma after winning the Big East. They won the Big East twice, and they have a winning record against Pittsburgh, Syracuse. They've beaten Notre Dame, South Carolina, a host of other quote-unquote Power 5 schools, such as Duke, Virginia. So, you know, and they've done that in a pretty short time frame. So, yeah, of course, UConn football is not Oklahoma. It's not Texas. It's not Iowa State even. But in 15 years, they've moved pretty well. And given the opportunity once again to have the resources of those Power 5 schools, I think they would, you know, and that competition on the schedule, I think there's a strong case to be made that, you know, it would be a football program on the rise.
Yeah, I think going back to when you were talking about what do you sort of remember about UConn's decision to join, you know, what's now the FBS Division 1A, and join the Big East, and what made them say yes and Villanova say no? I mean, do you feel like Villanova looks at that like a decision, you know, like Tulane leaving the SEC or Georgia Tech leaving, or where do you see, how do you feel like they categorize that?
Yeah, it would be hard to say that I had a great grasp of the politics and reasoning behind Villanova's decision. I mean, you can just kind of look at it and say, you know, that market is dominated by Penn State, that it's a smaller school than UConn is. So in terms of alumni and alumni being produced, they have a disadvantage there. They kind of have less of an incentive, I think, as a private school with a Jesuit, you know, their Jesuit system and kind of what their overall vibe is, whereas a state school, you know, has various reasons to kind of play this game a little bit stronger versus Villanova being private. So I think those are, and they were doing well in FCS. They drew good crowds. So if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Those can be, you know, any sort of you know, inferences as to why Villanova did not make that move. Ultimately, UConn's athletic director at the time decided that was the right move. And I think, you know, given how college athletics has shaped up, trying to become a player within the highest level of football is the smart move. So there was definitely some opposition to it. There's of course going to be people against spending public money for a stadium, you know, which needed to be built and upgraded. But I think if you believe in the value of college athletics, you believe in the value of succeeding within them, moving up to FBS was a good move. And one that, you know, UConn needs to keep investing in, but there definitely was strong opposition to the decision at the time.
Was that during the Lou Perkins era? Big 12 fans were very familiar with him going down at KU for a ticket scandal. Was that before or after, or was that during or after Lou Perkins at UConn?
That was during, yeah, that was Lou Perkins, okay. Who made that decision at UConn, and then I believe he went to Kansas after UConn.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So, you know, we've touched on sort of football, and I think it's hard. I mean, basketball, like you said, would obviously be awesome, a huge enhancement for the league. I mean, even thinking about some of those games, a UConn-Kansas game, you know, even UConn-Texas, if Shaka Smart gets it going there, it'd be a lot of fun. You know, Kansas, but I think, too, Kansas, one of the best programs in the game, has figured out how little basketball can mean. So I think the realignment discussion has to center so much on football, you know, fair or not. And I think, you know, on our BYU show earlier, you know, they have an advantage, I think, in just perception if they're coming in the league or how fans view them. You know, beating Oklahoma in 2009, beating Texas pretty badly, you know, beating them twice, it helps their perception in terms of just fans thinking about and imagining and trying to see them in the league. But UConn, I think for most Big 12 fans, you know, their only exposure was that Fiesta Bowl. And, you know, it's unfortunate. We had a month of talk, basically. You know, I was covered that game in Phoenix. We had a month of talk about how UConn, you know, shouldn't be there. They were 8-5 and this and that. And then basically 60 minutes of Oklahoma proving it. But when you think about OU or UConn trying to compete in the Big 12, what is sort of the game plan for them trying to build their program? How do you feel like they'd go about that?
Yeah, you know, I think for UConn, you're right that its perception really is about as low as it's ever been. I think the biggest reason for that is that when the national spotlight was shown the brightest on UConn football, it has been that Fiesta Bowl appearance, and then when all this conference realignment stuff was happening. So 2012, 2013, you know, ACC has UConn as a candidate. I think that was probably the other time recently where that bright of a spotlight was shown on UConn football and evaluating and looking at UConn football. So that's obviously not ideal. Right now, the new head coach, Bob Diaco, seems to have the program going in the right direction. He had, you know, a typical year zero rebuilding type of scenario in his first year, went 2-10. The team was 3-9, I believe, the previous year before he took over. But then this past year, his second year, the team went 6-7, made a bowl appearance, had a really good defense, notched a win against Houston to kind of crash the undefeated season that they had going on there, win over East Carolina. So, you know, pretty successful year two, and a lot of returning starters from that team this year, looking at a potential 8-win team, which is, again, just continued progress for UConn. They have three ACC teams on the non-conference schedule. Virginia, Boston College, Syracuse. I think they can at least win two of those games, if not potentially all three. They'll have a chance. Two of those teams have new head coaches. So I think you know, UConn has to kind of it'll be a step-by-step process to rebuild that perception. Recruiting seems to be improving from previous years, and I think it's just going to have to be a gradual process. And if Diaco keeps doing well, it's going to be holding on to Diaco, who recently signed a contract extension. So that, I think, you know, it's just keeping the ball rolling in the right direction and maintaining stability, because UConn's worst run came after Randy Edsall left, kind of unexpectedly. They had made a bad hire. So it's going to take a little bit of time, but they seem to be moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I like Diaco a lot. I think UConn football is so interesting because it is so young that I don't think people know what it is or what it can be. And they have some natural disadvantages that you know, Iowa State is kind of familiar with, and just not being in a super talent-rich area. But do they reach – how well can they reach over into Pennsylvania?
They've had a few players from Pennsylvania come in every year. Not some huge amount, but they have had some of their best players, someone like Julian Campeny, who was a senior last year, you know, all-conference guy at D-tackle. He was from Pennsylvania. They've had a couple of pretty good players, and they have a really good player on this year's team, Luke Carrizola, a defensive end outside linebacker hybrid who's been playing really well. He's from Pennsylvania. So they've been able to do all right in Pennsylvania. Diaco is from New Jersey, and so is actually our offensive coordinator, Frank Verducci. So they've done, you know, pretty solid in New Jersey. And then they've done a little bit of an expansion of the recruiting, you know, the areas where they're recruiting. They've been recruiting the Chicagoland area with some moderate success, and also the DMV, Maryland, Washington, D.C., and Virginia. So they seem to have a recruiting strategy that, you know, if you can do well in those states and do decently within your region – New York plus New England, it's not bad if you look at it in the aggregate. Connecticut's actually been producing some very, very some uncharacteristically high talent these past few years. They've got a couple of players, you know, who are really national recruits, multiple Michigan signees. So I think they've got a solid recruiting plan in place. It obviously remains to be seen how it goes, but definitely want to give Diaco a couple of years to have a full recruiting class come in, and then the 4 years after that until we can determine for sure if it's a success.
Verducci, I like that name. You don't see a lot of Italian Jersey-born folks around Texas in the Big 12. I'd like to see some new coaching blood around the league. You know, I've been to Connecticut a few times back when I was at the ESPN. I've never been to Storrs, though. I heard some, you know, not great things about the facilities. I think part of that is probably, you know, just the youth of the program and waiting on that sort of money to come in. Where do those stand? How would you describe that? And what's the plan moving forward for UConn and what they want their facilities to be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's interesting. It's the gripe about the facilities is mostly about the football stadium. Which is off campus by about 20, 25 miles, and has a capacity of 40,000. It has the structural capacity to grow that, but, you know, right now as it stands, UConn has had its challenges filling that stadium as is. That being said, the on-campus facilities are actually very competitive and quite tremendous on a national scale. It's not the football facility is not you know, it's not Alabama's or Oregon's or anything like that, but it was newly built in the 2007, 2008, something in that range, and then a brand new basketball facility was opened within the past 1 to 2 years. So actually, the on-campus facilities for those sports are really great. The stadium is where people have gripes about UConn's facilities. As far as Storrs is concerned, they have made a great deal of enhancements in the past 10 or 15 years. I myself attended UConn. I'm a 2010 graduate, and I can say that it is vastly different from even the year where I graduated now six years ago. So they've built a whole store center that has, you know, everything you need, restaurants, bars, coffee shops, stores, all that stuff. So the campus has improved. It's not a city, but I think now what you can say about it is that it is a nice college town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is the one area where I think they'd fit in. I think Big 12, when you talk about Power 5 conferences, I think the Big 12 certainly sort of has the worst run in terms of great places to go. So I think, you know, the Manhattan has its charms to it, but, you know, you got to have somebody kind of show you those charms. They don't necessarily come out on the first trip. What do you feel like is the long-term plan for them, you know, facility-wise? They have things sort of coming down the pipes, or, you know, what's it going to take for them to get to be where they want to be, or are they kind of there? How would you kind of categorize that?
So like I said, the football and basketball facilities are fairly new. Mm-hmm. I don't see those getting any significant upgrades or enhancements in the next decade or so. Maybe a quick refurbish of the football facility. Gamble Pavilion, UConn's on-campus basketball arena, certainly could use an upgrade. That's hopefully in the works. Some recent planned renovations were delayed, but I think the athletic department definitely sees that as a priority, or hopefully they do. And then the football stadium, it would be hard to believe that an on-campus football stadium is imminent, though obviously that would solve a lot of issues. But I frankly don't see the state of Connecticut putting that kind of money into a football stadium when there's a perfectly good one, and it's not so far away from campus. It's definitely not ideal, but I think in terms of the upgrades there, that would need to happen. Got to get that capacity up. But for that to happen, UConn has to start filling that stadium regularly. So that's kind of the short-term plan, or short-to-mid-term plan, I would say. And then hockey facilities are also a major area which is looking to improve. We recently moved into Hockey East and have started getting really competitive in what is widely considered the best conference in hockey. We're doing upgrades for our soccer and baseball in the works right now. Those are both very solid programs. UConn was in the baseball NCAA baseball tournament, as well as the NCAA soccer tournament this year, and has had some decent runs, particularly in men's soccer. So, there's a lot of mouths to feed, certainly, but I think they do have some minor upgrades and refurbishments in store in the short to midterm, but nothing too crazy.
You mentioned sort of them struggling to fill the football stadium. I don't get that sense for basketball. I mean, certainly being a national power is part of that. But what is kind of UConn's place in the area? I mean, how big is that gap between basketball and football, and how do you kind of bridge that? I mean, does bringing in, if Texas and Oklahoma start showing up in stores, does that fix that problem, or what do you kind of see as what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. If the level of competition improves, if you're bringing in storied programs like Texas and Oklahoma, then there absolutely is going to be a lift in attendance. The really kind of obvious answer is that winning solves everything. UConn was drawing very well and selling out a lot when they were better. It obviously really, really hurt UConn that in the past 5 years they've had some of their worst years, and then also had to downgrade conferences onto a schedule where there's not a lot of schools who, frankly, the fans care a whole lot about seeing. So I think, yeah, you would definitely see an uptick if the level of competition improved, but certainly winning, particularly in football, would help. The gap between basketball and football, I mean, well, let me take one step back. In terms of where UConn is in the Connecticut scene, it's the only sports show in town. It's the closest thing that UConn has, or that the state of Connecticut has, to professional sports is UConn athletics, is the men's and women's basketball teams and the football team. In terms of pro fandom, it's split between New York and Boston. So it is in some ways the only show in town. And then now going back to the gap, obviously men's basketball is very popular. Women's basketball is immensely popular. But I think for the football, if they started winning, if they started getting some better teams, even on the non-conference schedule, which to their credit they have, I think the fans are pretty excited about, as I mentioned earlier, Syracuse and Virginia coming in and visiting us this year, and then having a game with Boston College as well. So winning and playing teams that we care about, that fans care about, or people from the state of Connecticut care about, certainly would have an impact as well.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's interesting is just culture. You know, people complain about West Virginia's geography. That's probably fair. I think their closest school is Iowa State. I think it's like 950 miles, something like that. But culturally, it's a perfect fit. And I think in the Northeast, it's a little bit different. You know, if you're UConn, what do you kind of sell to the Big 12 on that front? And what's sort of the area's attitude, you know, toward football? It's obviously not Texas, but do people underrate sort of football in the Northeast and especially around Connecticut and sort of the passion that's there for that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there certainly is not the passion for high school football or college football as there is across a lot of Big 12 country. You know, definitely readily admit that. In terms of the sport of football, I would say it's really, really popular. I mean, you have Patriots fans, and then you have New York Giants and New York Jets fans. Those are some of the most plentiful and vocal fan bases in the NFL. And so there are definitely people who like football, and I think it's on UConn to keep building a quality football product so that people who are fans of football, which is a large group in that region, in that area, if UConn has a quality product, then the potential certainly is there to really raise that.
Yeah, so, you know, finally, kind of as we close, what, well, if you're looking in the crystal ball for UConn in the next 10, 20, 50 years, what do you see as the future for this athletic department? Where do they want to be? Where are they probably going to end up in terms of what's next?
Yeah, really great question. Obviously, I wish I knew, but I would say UConn, if you were to ask, you know, their president this question, they would say, you know, they're working really hard to get into either the ACC or the Big Ten. I think there's not a single person who would not admit that at best, UConn athletics is treading water in the American Athletic Conference. Basketball can continue to be as good as it is. Football, though that would have it, will have a ceiling, which was not the case as a member of the old version of the Big East. And then football, if it gets better, also has a ceiling. And that the American Athletic Conference itself, whether or not UConn gets out, if UConn does not get out and let's say two other schools from that conference are invited, that would then even potentially be the beginning of a slide, because then UConn's not making that even as much money as it is right now to keep up. So I think, you know, UConn is working really, really hard to get into either the ACC or the Big Ten. Those are much, much better fits for UConn than the Big 12.
I agree.
Those are the two power conferences which make a lot of sense, I think. And if they can do that, then it will certainly help. UConn is a school that I think presents a strong case study for athletics being helpful in driving academic improvement. When your sports are better, applications go up, you're able to be more selective, and just broadly speaking, more people know about your school and have your school on the radar. And so UConn has improved dramatically academically in terms of its rankings and perception in the past 10 to 15 years. So hopefully that continues. And you know, anyone, we can all speculate and guess as to how the NCAA will be formatted and structured in the next 5, 10, 15 years. Maybe conferences go away and there's just one division, and or the conferences all go up to 16, who knows. But I think ultimately UConn's athletics brand, which it has developed, is strong enough to sustain if it does have to stay in the American. But obviously it would be very ideal for the athletics, for the program, to justify all the money that they're spending, to at some point start making the same amount of money that the schools which they have been competing with are making. Those are, you know, Rutgers, Syracuse, Boston College in their respective conferences.
Makes sense. I think that's sort of the million-dollar question. It makes it hard. I don't envy the administrators who have to make these decisions with really incomplete information. I mean, anything you do is kind of a gamble at this point. But it's always interesting. So I want to thank Amon Kidwai, our guest, for this week's show. Talking UConn. Amon, I'll give you the final parting shot. Anything you want to leave us with?
No, I think we covered pretty much everything.
All right, well, I appreciate it. Thanks again. You can check him out at Amon from CT on Twitter, Rivals and SB Nation. Thanks again, and we'll see you guys again next time.